ABC Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Get ready for some girls talk, talking about sport. Another great panel with me today on Hens FC from Fox Sports News, Louise Ransom, who I like to think of as a bit of a rugby head when I need someone to talk rugby, apart from, well, there's a few. We just had Georgina Robinson on Cracking the Codes, but welcome to the show, Louise. Apart from rugby, what's been on your sporting landscape this week?
Well, I've been on Origin Injury Watch the last couple of days, back on the road for Fox Sports News, which has been fun.
And observing moon boot use.
Yes, pretty much. I think I got to the part of when they were out of the moon boot, so then it was just whether they'd run, and so obviously all the gallon stuff yesterday and racing around, kind of go back to the press conference. So yeah, it's been in a busy couple of days in terms of that.
Did you always have the feeling Gallen wasn't going to make it? That was even just hearing him interviewed, it just reading between the lines, he didn't sound like he was ever really a chance.
No, and especially we were at training on Thursday at Coogee and again on Friday, and Thursday didn't do much at all. Greg Bird had a bit of a run, obviously the other player under an injury cloud, but yesterday Gallen, he kind of did a couple of widths of the field in terms of running, did a couple of sprints and that was it, and then just put his jacket on and sat in the bleachers for the rest of the time, and I just thought, oh, that's not enough to give anyone any sort of confidence.
Okay, Louise Ransom, we'll talk more topics in sport with her in a moment. I want to welcome another regular from Hens FC, Alyssa Healy. Welcome back to the show. Alyssa, Australian cricketer, wicket keeper. Now, I know, obviously, you would have been watching a fair bit of cricket this week. Have you had time for anything else in sport, or is it just cricket, cricket, cricket?
It has been all cricket, but it's just been a nice couple of weeks, I think. Not so much for Australian sport, but for sport fans in general, obviously with the Lions tour, the Wimbledon, now the Ashes, and then obviously Origin, as mentioned. So if you're not a sports fanatic, then you'd probably be a bit bored at the moment, but for everyone else in Australia, we're pretty excited.
But well slept, you know, if you're not a sports fan, at least you don't have your eyes hanging out.
You're not like me at the moment.
I know. Did you watch the Wimbledon final, for instance?
You know what, I actually didn't.
You didn't?
No.
Oh, okay. I watched it. I actually taped it and I had the day off, so I could avoid the result until
I finished at midnight, so it was perfect timing. I stayed up and watched it. I think went to bed at about 2:30.
Lindsay Clement Meehan from New South Wales and ACT AFL. There are still far too many letters in your title. I think you need to lose some of them. Is there anything else? Well, AFL obviously has been on your radar a lot this week. Anything else? Or
yeah. Oh, well, I mean, I'm fantastic at starting to watch great sport late at night.
And falling asleep.
Finishing. Yeah. No, that's not my forte. But during the day, actually, we've had the under-16 AFL championships out at Blacktown all week, so there's been a lot of young footballers in action. So we've had the World Team, the Flying Boomerangs, the South Pacific team, so it's all coming together for a multicultural round this week.
You can't throw us a sort of AFL Ashton Agar equivalent that you spotted this week?
Oh, no, look, I'm sorry. I could not live up to that standard. Not yet. No. We've got a lot of fabulous kids, though, but I'm not sure if they're going to make stunning debuts like that.
Okay, well, Will Ashton Agar, of course, we have to discuss him as part of the sports review of the week today. We're definitely getting on to that. We'll also talk about the change at the top in the Wallabies coaching ranks with Ewan McKenzie taking over from Robbie Deans and Harry O'Brien. What an extraordinary week. I mean, it's probably in some ways Ashton Agar coming along has been great for Harry because it's taken him out of the headlines, at least in some parts of Australia, maybe not in Melbourne. But we'll see what the Hens have made of the Harry story this week. And also we'll be talking to one of Alyssa Healy's teammates, Alex Blackwell, who's the vice-captain of the Australian women's cricket team, is, believe it or not, in Japan, coaching the Japanese women's cricket team. Did you think that was just some sort of excuse she made up to slip away during
get out of training,
Alyssa?
Yeah, well, it probably surprises a lot of people that Japan actually have both a male and female cricket team, but they're actually one of the big up-and-comers in that Asian region in the World Cup qualifiers, so look out for them in the future.
Oh, they'll be kicking heads too after Alex has been through the
I don't know if we should be sharing that kind of talent with the world.
Yes, we'll talk to Alex as as the program goes along, probably in about 20, 25 minutes from now. So that's all still to come on Hens FC. And look, why not? If you've got any comments that you'd like to share with the Hens panel, 0467 920 222, you can tweet us at ABC Grandstand, or you can tweet me direct at Deb Spillane. And if you actually look in at my Twitter feed, or at least the tweets I've sent out, you can get the Twitter addresses for all the panelists as well. I won't throw more numbers and names at you at the moment, but we're all happy to hear from you. We'll move on to talk cricket after this.
Family secrets.
I want a divorce.
Society scandal.
The reason he's been creeping about at night is to see me.
And forbidden love.
Run away with me, Ruby. Leave them all behind.
Or make a deadly cocktail.
To my sister.
What is that? Would be telling.
A salacious mystery so confusing.
Everyone is hiding something.
Will it flummox the faithful?
I do know what sex is, Inspector.
Father Brown, tonight, 7:30, ABC One.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
There is no better time in a nation devoted to sport than that in which the cricket team is halfway around the world, locked in the battle for the Ashes.
In the shadow boxing preamble, Australia has delayed naming their 11 until the toss.
The shock selection, 19-year-old left-arm spinner Ashton Agar to make his test debut. One of the biggest bombshell selections in the history of Australian cricket, probably the history of Australian sport. Hey, I just met you.
What is Australian cricket thinking? I mean, you've thrown down some stats that we've all done, crash coursing on Ashton Agar. If he was sitting here right now, you'd be forced to introduce him as well, because no one knows who he is. Zero tests and 10 first-class matches. What's doing?
I was really surprised. I think everyone backed Nathan Lyon. We all thought he'd done enough, and it's a bit of a bolt from the blue, this.
The most Googled name, I think, in Australia yesterday was Ashton Agar.
It'll be fascinating to find out this thought from Michael Clarke in a moment. With Ashton Agar, 19 years old, he's played only 10 first-class matches. Looks a decent cricketer, though.
Maybe a surprise to some, not to us. He's bowled really well since coming onto the tour. I think he's performed really well in the last practice game. England have a lot of right-hand batters as well, so I think he can play a big part in taking 20 wickets.
He's pretty cool. He doesn't get a lot on the ball. Maybe he wasn't trying to spin it very hard today. Maybe he was just trying to be accurate. But he bowled with a nice pace, with a nice loop. He was a surprise choice ahead of Lyon, I must say.
Australia's trailing England by 141 after losing 4 wickets late on day 1 of the first test at Trent Bridge.
So 9 wickets are down for 117.
Here goes Swan then, into bowl to Agar, who plays that nice. He gets his first run, at least, in Test cricket. England have a man back on the cover boundary, and he is off the mark.
No, you haven't finished with 9 down. You have to get them out.
Mm. See much wrong with that. It goes all the way. Test cricket, not a problem. That'll be his 50. Well played, young man. Magnificent effort.
That's another 4. Hello, welcome to Test cricket. Who is this fella?
Australia's Ashton Agar scored 98 off 101 balls on his debut to help guide his side to 280 all out. It's the highest score by a number 11 in Test history.
Just trying to do my best for the team, really. I was pretty rapt to get 98.
He's truly blessed, Ashton. He's worked very hard. He works very hard at everything he does, and he's a good boy.
Oh, he's a good boy. That's his mum talking on the end. And actually, I was listening to Grandstand Digital Breakfast this morning. I think it was Karen Lyon speaking to Frank Leach. And she said, he's a good boy in a sporting world where we just haven't seen too many good boys lately.
I think that's the best part. He's just a very likeable young man. And what a breath of fresh air.
Now, Alyssa Healy, what was your reaction when you heard that he was picked in the first test team?
Yeah, well, obviously it was a bit of a surprise, but there had been a few murmurs or rumours, whatever you like to say, floating around that, yeah, he might get the nod ahead of Lyon. And obviously it's turned out pretty well, hasn't it? And I think it's just everyone's been talking about adding experience to the team, but maybe just that injection of youth and the freedom that he's playing with is just what we needed.
Yeah, what was your reaction, Louise?
Yeah, I think I was at work and we were all just like, you know, quickly changing our graphics on our show, going, oh, wow, kind of had Lyon already in there. And then the Agar thing came out and a shock. But I think the fact we've had so many changes recently with Australian cricket, it's quite a...
Especially in the spin bowling
department. Yeah, exactly. But just in terms of the coaches and stuff too, and like with Lehman, I think it's quite a strong move by him to kind of go, this is where we're going to go with this. And just, he is such a likeable character. He was so fun to watch. Everyone, I actually couldn't stay up to watch all of his innings, but everyone the next day was like, this was the best innings we've ever watched. It was just incredible.
What did you know about his batting, Alyssa? Had you heard anything at all about, because I mean, I had heard of him as a spin bowler. I was a bit surprised by some of the sports journalists saying, Ashton who? Like, I mean, I couldn't have told you much about him, but his name has kind of been floating around on the periphery, and I think he was used bowling in the nets against the test team last summer, and there was a bit of a buzz around. But I guess I did expect that Fawad Ahmed might get a chance before Agar. But did you watch the batting, and obviously you've got more of a handle on technique than any of us. Were you surprised that he was, you know, obviously much better than a number 11?
I don't think so. I think, obviously, you heard on that little snippet before, he's played 10 first-class games and he's made 3 or 4 half-centuries for WA. So I don't think it was a surprise that he could actually hold a bat. Obviously, for the Poms it was when he was coming in at number 11. But, yeah, look, I think somebody said on commentary as well, he'd played a bit over in England and he was actually batting number 3. So... could actually hold a bat, and he proved us. He proved that he could do that. But yeah, I love that. There's some rumours going around that this was probably Darren Lehman at his best. Yeah, obviously picking him for his spin bowling, but secretly picking him for his batting and hiding him down at number 11 in case of this situation. So we'd love to think of it like that. But yeah, hopefully he can.
No, I'm sure that was all part of the plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely inspired selection.
Well, yeah. you're in the media and communications business, Lindsay. The thing that astonishes me, looking back on it, is that he knew on the Monday and was able to call his parents and say, "Get over to England. I'm going to be making my test debut." It didn't get out.
Yeah, that was pretty impressive. Look, I don't know how they did keep that quiet, but I'm sure it would have been one of those press releases where, you know, bio attached, so you could get, you know, a briefing of who this person actually was, because it would have just taken everyone by surprise. But I don't know if there'd be too many journalists camped out in, you know, Tullamarine waiting for them to leave. It's not like there was a build-up, you know, before it. So
I'm surprised Malcolm Conn didn't know. He seems to know everything before it all happens.
So. Exactly.
I think Mal was on AFL duty last week, so perhaps he wasn't.
Oh, he wasn't there, that's why. Look out.
Yeah. And the other thing that did surprise me a bit is that you know, during the play on that first day, we've all just recovered from the news that, well, not just Ashton Agar but Steve Smith, probably slightly less of a surprise, but he's in the lineup. And then they say, oh, by the way, we're going to pack David Warner off to South Africa and Zimbabwe.
I mean, that was a great announcement. Then awkwardly, he was sitting there all day. So
well, but yeah. He wasn't leaving. They said he wasn't leaving till Thursday.
So oh, okay. Well, I missed that detail.
I think he's there now. And yes, but. Well, it's probably good to get him away from young Ashton, I think. Yeah.
Well, that's
oh,
it.
Oh, what are we suggesting here?
No.
Kneecapping, things like that.
No. I just mean, you know, just...
Behaviour.
Yeah, behaviour-wise. Yeah.
And that's a great thing about Ashton Agar is, you know, what as Lindsay said, a likeable character. And I think in terms of what Australian cricket needed, there's been so much, you know, negativity around it all. It's just been a great story. And he just seemed to do everything with ease. He seemed to be out there just, you know, taking it all in, and nothing seemed to faze him. And that was enjoyable to watch. And then the press conference afterwards, he was, you know, likeable again in that. It's just been a fabulous couple of days in terms of bringing Australian cricket back up into a nicer light.
Well, I heard Peter Wilkins in one of those audio grapes that I put with that little music package we had there. He said that he's studying law.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps that's one of the reasons why he actually managed to keep a secret. He's practicing his confidentiality agreements, perhaps. So, but yeah, I just think that that's impressive as well. The fact that at 19, he, you know, not only gets into the Australian team, but knows days in advance, keeps it under his hat. And Alyssa, how much of an advantage would that have been? Or we'll flip it around the other way. How much of a disadvantage to England would it have been having this guy come out of left field that they didn't know very much about and it was only announced at the toss?
Yeah, well, obviously a huge disadvantage for them. I don't know, even if, you know, at the toss when it was announced, that they would have taken too much notice of it, I guess, especially with his batting, but they probably would have looked at his bowling and maybe even spoken to some people that he played against. Obviously, he was on the Aussie A tour. So, yeah, look, probably a big disadvantage for them. Obviously, he hasn't taken the world by storm with his bowling just yet, but hopefully he can take a few more wickets and then they might stand up and take a little bit more notice. But obviously, yeah, he's done that with his batting anyway. So
yeah, he got a couple of wickets last night. But let's move on to look at the overall situation in the test. Not Australia got a lot of work to do. At this stage, how do you see the situation, Alyssa?
Yeah, look, I think it's just really exciting to see a really good test match. Obviously, the media and a lot of Australians wrote the Aussie boys off before they headed over there. So it's nice to see that you know that they've done what they've spoken about and they've really given it to the Poms and just put on a really hard fought battle. And obviously, we've got a long way to go. I think if we can rip through them early tomorrow morning or tonight for us, then it'll, you know, put us well ahead. And I think hearing Kevin Peterson in his post-match conference yesterday, he was saying that, look, they want to be at least 260 ahead. I'm not sure what they are now, but...
They're 261. They're 6 for 236 England in their second innings, so they've got 261 runs, and only three times has the team batting last at Trent Bridge scored more than 200 to win the game. So
we've already had one record broken.
Oh, so, that's right, yes. We've had two, in fact, the 10th wicket stand.
Oh, yeah,
and the 11th batsman record. What now? Tell me about Trot Rage, Lindsay Clement. Man, you were on the show.
Can I just say, firstly, though, isn't it great to hear Kevin Peterson speaking? Isn't it just a delight? He's just great.
You don't like Kevin Peterson, do you?
I don't like any of them.
I
Dan.
Do.
Come
I like.
On.
I like Kevin. I love Graeme Swann.
He's one that you love to
at least
hate.
He's got a sense of humour. Yeah,
I love watching him around the cricket field, but sometimes you're like, oh.
Yeah. Oh, seriously, his message. Did you see the message that the England cricket team sent the British and Irish Lions? Graeme Swann, like, he could host a Tonight Show, I think, definitely, when he's finished cricket. But yeah, so Lindsay, last year you sort of brought up the whole concept of Trot Rage because he just irritates you so much. How did you feel the other night when he was so unfairly dismissed? I thought of you straight away.
My heart absolutely bled for him. I mean, what a champion bloke. It's just... Couldn't have happened to a better bloke. I loved it. It was great. I was giving him the dismissal of a lifetime in my lounge room. It was great.
Yes.
I thought that was fantastic.
I wonder if he sat down after he got out and looked at the replay and the hotspot and everything and just thought, why did I act like that? Like, it's
like no, ball, I don't think he did.
You don't think so?
I guess he's got that self-awareness.
I guess technology can fail us sometimes, but you clearly did not hit the ball, so I don't know what the go was there.
Anything else from the test, Louise, that has caught your fancy or irritated you? I mean, I guess the
drama last night. Yeah, that's I think that's definitely got to be talked about. That was... I don't know. This sort of thing always confuses me, I guess, because I always think, don't cheat. If you're out, there's some sort of etiquette, I think, that still needs to be involved in cricket and sports like tennis and things like that, that I think needs to stay there. But then you talk to people who actually play the game, and Lisa, you might be able to comment on this, but you know, it is up to the umpire to make the decision to say someone's out. It's a really tricky one, I think. It could go either way just in terms of what your actual opinion is.
Yeah, look, shame on any cricketer out there who's bagging Stuart Broad at the moment. I think anybody who plays the game, knows the game, thinks that, you know, you get that one chance pretty much in cricket, and when you get away with it, sometimes it makes you feel really good. But obviously, it's such a big occasion. It was such a big wicket as well. It's going to be talked about, but look, you can't blame Stuart Broad at all. It's the umpire's decision. That's at the end what of the
I
day, think.
And, yeah. You know, and like, you know, I'm not the kind of person who likes to blame umpires, but it was such a horrible mistake from an umpire that I think it's in some ways it's unfair to now put the onus back on Stuart Broad. I don't understand why, if he was in any doubt, why Alim Dar couldn't have. He can call for a replay or the video, the off-field umpire to have
I'm a bit confused by that as well. But, yeah, clearly, by the way, the Australians reacted, you'd think that, you know,
they were he's
hit the ball, hasn't he? So
Clark was fuming, wasn't he?
Yeah, what a blown-up as well.
Well, the other interesting question is Michael Clark partly to blame for blowing his video review challenges on
no,
no
I don't
you
think
can't
so,
yeah. you can't Clark bash there I think, you know,
I think the two
Clark
the two
bash dishes yeah, sensationalizing well, isn't
like
she
well tabloid journalist
I think the two that he actually referred I was sitting on the couch and going oh that's out like straight away so oh, okay. Look from the naked eye you'd forgive him but obviously when they slow it down it's clearly not out
and Peter Siddle said in the press conference he's like you can't keep those referrals in your back pocket you know if you think one's there you can't go oh maybe there'll be one later and you know it's like in tennis you know with reviews as well you just if you think there's a question mark, you've got to kind of question it.
Well, I think the interesting thing will be is what Stuart Broad's dad has to say about this, who Chris Broad, I think his name is, and he's a cricket official who famously banned someone for three matches for unsportsmanlike behaviour.
Well, he's often a referee for these test series, isn't he, Chris Broad? Just take us inside the head of a batsman, Alyssa, or a batter in your case. When that happens and you know you're out, I mean, is there a little sort of conversation, the good Alyssa and the bad Alyssa arguing with each other momentarily about do I just walk or...
Look, it's happened to me. Obviously, it wasn't in Ashes series and it wasn't a huge game, but look, it's all... You know you've hit it and you know you're out, but when the umpire gives you not out, you kind of sheepishly giggle. I think you're like, oh, hang on a minute, I've got a chance here. Like, it's almost like if you hit a ball straight down someone's throat and they drop it. Like, it's almost that sort of, you know, I shouldn't have done that, but look,
no,
I'm still in,
that,
I'm still
Alyssa.
Going.
I'm sure Australians would never act in that fashion.
Oh, well, look, it's just such a cutthroat like game that yeah, look, it's...
So you don't blame Stuart Broad?
I don't blame him at all. Like, in that sort of situation, you're going to wait for the umpire to give that out because it is such a big, big wicket, a big, big time in the game. You're going to wait for the umpire to give it out, like... Johnny Bairstow walked on his court behind, and who knows if the umpire would have given that out, but he walked, and look, probably not as big a time in the game. There was, you know, kind of just...
Maybe he'll harden up, yeah.
Yeah, so...
be planting themselves there waiting for
Well, I guess I can imagine if you're a batsman too that it's the swings and roundabouts theory where you must get given out times when you know you're not out.
Oh, you get out... You get given out a lot of times when you're not out, way more than that you get that opportunity where you're given not out. So, yeah, look, take it and run with it. But at the same time, I think Australia has the right to be a bit grumpy this morning.
Now, I just have to refer, we're all keen tweeters, this group of women on Hens FC. And by the way, if you've just joined us, Louise Ransom from Fox Sports News, Alyssa Healy from the Southern Stars, Australia's women's cricket team, and Lindsay Clement-Meehan from the ACT or New South Wales and ACT AFL.
You can just say AFL.
Just AFL, yes. She's just, AFL in the roughly local vicinity. Now, I was looking on Twitter the other night while the test was underway, and I wonder how you deal with this, Alyssa, because I saw that you had to reply to someone who said, "Tell your boyfriend to stop being a prick to the opposition when he gets them out."
That was
taking
a
wicket
like
is victory enough. Now, for those of you who don't know, Alyssa is the other half of Mitchell Starc.
The better half.
The better half. Yeah, sorry, I should have.
Deb.
I'm sorry. I missed an opportunity there. Is Mitchell Starc's better half? How do you cope with that? How much this has just happened to be one that I see. Do you cop a lot of tweeting about Mitchell and that sort of thing?
Oh, look, a lot of the tweeting I cop is more positive than negative, so I'd like to say that. But yeah, that one was pretty funny, I think. I don't think you can tell a fast bowler that, you know, to calm down after they got someone's wicket, especially when, you know, when Mitch is playing against two teammates he played against in Yorkshire and they've probably been giving him a little stick leading into it.
So who are they? Who are the ones that he's played?
Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow. So look, I did have a giggle, though, when Mitch is not the most fiery fast bowler going around, and some people think that's a bad thing. But you know, when he goes, when the ball comes back to him and he picks it up to go and throw it back at the batsman, like some of them do, and Joe Root and Johnny Bairstow stand there laughing. So it's just a, a show of Mitch's character that they know he's just not going to throw it.
Not
so
serious.
But yeah, the Twitter sphere. I cop a little bit when, you know, I go a little too far and praising Mitch or bagging someone. I cop
oh,
a bit.
Heaven forbid you'd praise your boyfriend.
Oh, no, I get in trouble. It's more the cricket gracious. Boys that get me in strife for PDAs and things like that. So we kind of try to keep that to a minimum. But, yeah, look, it's a bit of fun. I appreciate everyone's opinions.
Yeah, and have you spoken to Mitch during the course of the test?
I have, yeah. I've been up early.
How's he feeling about the way it's going and his form in particular?
Yeah, well, I think they're pretty positive. Obviously, I didn't speak to him this morning, but yeah, look, it'll be a really tough challenge for them, and I'm sure that he'll say the same thing. But yeah, look, he's been pretty pleased with himself. Obviously, he's bowled well over 20 overs, and he hasn't done that for a very long time without being injured. So I think he's pretty pleased that his body's holding up and he's getting the ball to move a little bit.
Lisa, does he do that sort of press conference cliche talk when he chats to you? Like, yeah, just taking it a day at a time, giving it 110%. Yeah,
giving full credit to the boys.
No, not at all. So I can't give you insight into what he actually says, but I'll say that he does do that, yeah.
Yeah, so all right. Well, you haven't trained him out of the press. You have trained him out of the press speak when you're in the relationship. Yeah. Hopefully it stays that way for you. We'll hopefully talk more cricket shortly when we get Alex Blackwell, the vice captain of the Australian women's team, on the line from Japan. But we might move on to another topic that's been big in the world of sport this week, coming up after this.
Right now, you don't know the colour of my hair, my eyes, or my skin. You don't know whether I'm short or tall, but I'll give you a clue. I'm a well-known sportsman. Sports should be about being equal, regardless of your skin colour or where you come from. You see, sport is for everyone. That's why it's so important to treat everyone with respect. To keep your sport inclusive, safe and fair, go to playbytherules.net.au. By the way, I'm Adam Goods from the Sydney Swans and I'm Indigenous. Not that that matters.
On ABC Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Online and on Grandstand Digital.
And the Lions have come up victorious, 41 points to 16 over the Wallabies here at the Olympic Stadium in Sydney.
Will Robbie Dean survive?
All indications are that he will be gone.
Robbie Deans's position had been under intense scrutiny following the Wallabies series loss to the British and Irish Lions. The ARU sacked Deans after a scheduled meeting. The New Zealander had coached the Wallabies in 74 test matches, but had only led the team to 3 wins from 18 games against the All Blacks.
The missing link has arrived to be the Wallabies' saviour. Ewan McKenzie takes over from Robbie Deans and says he's proud, privileged and ready.
A really important time in Australian rugby, not only on the field. People will worry about where the Wallabies are at. I'm worried about that.
I think team discipline is one of the key issues that we need to focus on going forward. You and I have already talked about drafting a set of guiding principles.
The only opportunity you get to play for the Wallabies is if the Wallaby coach chooses you to play. And for me, that's a week-to-week contract. So if you're not doing the right thing at the right time, well, that week-to-week contract might not be theirs.
After coffee with mates this morning, Robbie Deans refused to comment on his sacking. The ARU claimed that Deans resigned before admitting he was to be replaced by Ewan McKenzie, even if the Wallabies won their series against the Lions.
McKenzie says while he's looking forward to taking up the role, he does sympathise with outgoing coach Robbie Deans.
It's disappointing for Robbie. I think he made a great contribution.
Bill Pulver confirmed players were consulted but denied they knew Deans would be sacked before the third test.
Ewan McKenzie, what do you think he can bring to test level? He's had a lot of success with the Reds and Waratahs.
He rebuilt the Waratahs and made the Reds Super Rugby champions with Quade Cooper at fly half.
Quade's an outstanding player.
I think it's rather ironic that here we've got Ewan talking about he's going to bring discipline back to the game when it's actually his player for Queensland who's the most ill-disciplined player. But don't rush Quade back. Rehabilitate the kids, yes, but they need to get the harmony back in the team because the senior players really don't like the young kids being upstarts.
He wants to make it clear to the players what it means to be a Wallaby.
Brumbies coach Jake White believes Ewan McKenzie was given the nod over him for the Wallabies coaching role simply because McKenzie's Australian.
It came down to McKenzie or the Brumbies South African mentor Jake White. The ARU says nationality wasn't a factor.
The South African said it wasn't just a perception that Australian coaches are currently being given the nod to take over Australian teams, implying that it's logic. South Africans would pick their own, Kiwis pick Kiwis, and English rugby use English coaches.
What we're learning is that Australia doesn't have an appetite for international coaches in sports that we believe we are world's best.
His first test in the hot seat is against the All Blacks in Sydney on August 17.
Yes, rugby union. Now we've got an Australian coach, someone from down under. Louise Ransom, you're very much into rugby union. Do you think that actually played a key role, the fact that Ewan McKenzie is an Aussie and we'd had a New Zealander and the only other main contender was a South African? Did we have to go Aussie?
I think it was played a major role. I think, though, an interesting just comment and line I heard during the week was, yes, he's an Aussie, but he's the right Aussie. And I think that's a really big thing. Jake White would have been a great coach as well. He was actually formally interviewed for the job, the ARU said. But to go with Ewan, I think, was the very popular public decision as well, in terms just of how much criticism Deans has copped, and the kind of the easy criticism that, you know, being a Kiwi in charge of an Aussie team, I think just from, yeah, a public perception, it was the move that the ARU should have done. And Ewan's earned it. Like, if you go through his resume, he's been involved in the Wallabies World Cup winning coaching team as an assistant coach.
You could argue that he was coaching. I mean, Rob McQueen was more like a figurehead, I think. He wasn't really on the ground much. So, I mean, Ewan's really been there in the thick of it in, you know, a really positive team environment. So
he has. And interesting, the thing that really stood out to me as well was Ewan's turned down the job before. He felt he wasn't ready. It was a few years ago, I think, before he maybe went overseas to coach and went back to the Reds.
That's got to give you cred when you want the job, when you say, well, I know you wanted to give it to me before, I didn't have enough experience, now
and I now
do.
I do.
So he's playing the long game, do you think? It's all part of the plan.
Possibly.
But it was. And I mean, it has been a really planned thing by McKenzie, because at the beginning of the year, he said, okay, I'm not at the Reds next year. Richard Graham's going to take over completely. And so he's kind of, you know, been still coaching the Reds, but, you know, definitely in a transition period. So he put himself up saying, look, this is what I want. Are you going to give it to me? And then they did, and I think everyone is pretty much happy.
Smart, well, he's a very shrewd man. I can't imagine that, you know, as you said, that it wasn't all planned out like that. But I think, I mean, you never really know. There's so much conjecture around coaching roles, and he's always, you know, named as, you know, in the mix for the Irish job or, you know, the Welsh job or things like that. So, I mean, you could never tell.
And the interesting thing with rugby is it's always been such a big New South Wales versus Queensland kind of divide. And, you know, obviously Ewan has coached the Waratahs, took them to a couple of finals, then went up to the Reds, obviously got the Super Rugby Championship with them. But there was kind of the thought, I think it's kind of moved away in rugby a little bit the last few years, but the thought that they'd go with a South African coach purely because New South Wales, I guess the big guys in the ARU didn't want a Queensland, kind of someone to be involved in Queensland to be coaching the Wallabies. But
God, you'd hope that they would be able to overcome such a barrier.
Yes, well, they have.
That sounds more childish than that sort of demand we have to have in Australia. Alyssa, what do you think of that whole, because, I mean, it kind of has come into play in cricket in recent years too. A lot of the criticism there was a lot of criticism of Mickey Arthur, but then there was that, oh, thank God, now we've got an Australian coach. Do you think we should care about that?
Yes and no. Like, I think you want the best person for the job, and look at whether they be from another country, who cares? They're going to do the best for us. But, yeah, being an Australian, you kind of want an Australian at the top. You know, someone who's been there, done it. You know, Aussies are always seen as the battlers, the underdogs. Someone who's been in that position and is willing to, I guess, pass on that knowledge and experience onto the young players will, you know, is kind of what we want. And, yeah, like we said, it's... yeah, it's nice to have an Aussie at the top, and hopefully the people in the media will let that rest now and maybe just judge him on his stats instead of where he comes from.
Yeah.
Louise, how big an issue was discipline and, you know, specifically the behaviour of James O'Connor and Kirtley Beale, who, by the way, if you've just joined us, Kirtley Beale has been told he's not wanted at Melbourne Rebels either. James O'Connor played his last game for them last night and scored at the last minute to give them a victory against the Highlanders. But was that an issue? Because I was hearing there were rumours that he didn't particularly like that. Sorry, that the senior players were annoyed that he was showing so much latitude or giving so much latitude to Beale and O'Connor.
Yeah, I think that was the big issue. The fact that senior players in the Wallabies were actually expressing this, that's when you kind of know it's a massive problem. If they've got to that point where they're kind of telling people in the media that yes, this is happening, I think you kind of really stop and go, okay, right, this is the issue. And I mean, James O'Connor said, you know, we've got to be smarter about this in the press conference after they were, you know, found at a Hungry Jack's store in Melbourne at 4 a.m. in the morning. But they weren't. There was issues of missing team buses to the game, not turning up post game after the loss to the Lions, like just things like that. You're a national team.
A long record of breathtaking stupidity. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I love the way you put it. You make it sound so sophisticated. A long record of breathtaking stupidity.
But that's what it was. And I think you know there was no discipline. And with the two candidates for the Wallabies job, some people were saying, you know, Jake White would be very good with the discipline because he's been like that with the Brumbies, had a lot of young guys coming through and really like, you know, you either behave on and off the field or, you know, you don't play. But Ewan will do that as well. And Ewan
absolutely,
said,
they both have a great record of that. Yeah. And the team environment and, you know, that kind of, you know, positive reinforcement and senior players, you know, playing a bigger role in that kind of mentoring and things like that. I think that'll really come to the fore. And over the next couple of months.
And especially now because, like, James O'Connor's options in terms of playing in Australia for an Australian franchise are pretty much limited to the Western Force now, which is where he came from to come to the Melbourne Rebels. Kirtley Beale, there was lots of talk about him coming back to the Waratahs, and that will probably happen now, but his price will go down considerably because there's no competition now.
Okay, talking about coaching and foreigners coaching Australian teams, on the line we have an Aussie who's coaching a foreign team, and, you know, I don't know what the Japanese media are making of Alex Blackwell and her work with the Japanese women's cricket team. Maybe she's flying under the radar. Hi, Alex, how are you?
I'm well, Dev. How are you?
I'm fine. Now, tell us a little bit about, I know you and I have discussed this trip that you're taking to Japan to work with the Japanese women's cricket team, but I'm sure it's a surprise to a lot of people, firstly, that Japan even have a cricket team, let alone a women's cricket team. How are they? Tell us what sort of talent you're working with there.
Well, this morning has been the first time I've actually seen them in action, and I had a few sort of preconceived ideas about how they might go about their cricket, but and one of them's come true. The way that they're very intense and they want to get in there, and they enjoy their cricket as well, but they work really hard. And it's been really great this morning. I've shown them a bit of batting. We're going to branch out a little bit and do a bit of sweep shots and reverse sweeps in a moment. So just challenge them to get outside the box a little bit.
So you're at the nets with them at the moment?
Yeah, we're just in a little indoor sort of, well, it's like a multi-purpose synthetic net, which is open, and we're just doing some batting work inside there. So the facilities are pretty limited here at Sano, which is the centre of cricket in Japan, but we're going to be playing a few 2020s in the next couple of days.
Hey Alex, it's Midge. Tell us a bit about what you're actually doing with the girls. Are you planning playing a few games with them, or just a lot of training?
Yeah, we're doing a bit of skill development at the moment. We've got 3 days with them, Midge, so it's like a national training camp, which we've got for ourselves in a few weeks. So a bit of skill work today, and then we're going to do some 2020 matches because they're preparing for a 2020 qualifying tournament in Ireland shortly. And even as, you know, the Southern Stars, we don't get to know about the other nations and what they're doing. So it's fantastic to see these girls in action and hopefully help them qualify for the 2014 World Cup.
Yeah, cool.
Alex, it's Louise Ransom from Fox Sports News. I was just wondering, we were talking before that we probably shouldn't be sharing your great cricketing knowledge with other countries. I just wondered what, I guess, drew you to going over there and helping this Japanese side.
Especially not the sweep shot.
Yeah, look, and they absorb everything. They're so keen. From what I hear, they take their notebooks to all the meetings and they write down stuff. They'll listen to everything you say. So maybe it's not the best thing that I'm here teaching them. We might be coming up against them in Bangladesh. So, yeah, look, they're really keen. But it's an ICC initiative. I'm an East Asia Pacific ambassador, so any chance that I get to go to some of these more developing nations in terms of cricket, I'll be able to go and just take part and be a bit of a role model, I guess, for them and be a part of their training so that they can see how it's done. Not that I know how to bowl, so I'll be looking at them and helping them from the sideline, I think.
Hey, Alex, it's Lindsay Clement-Meehan. I must say you have a long history of being a cricketing role model to young women. My younger sister, Alex, she came home one day when she just started at Sydney Uni, and she came home with a big cricket kit when she started with the team, and it was just emblazoned with Blackwell all over it. So I don't know if any of the talent has rubbed off or osmosis or anything like that, but I think you've donated some of your kit and helped out the younger generation a fair bit already.
Yeah, look, I have really enjoyed sort of putting back into the game a little bit. And at my club, the university's Women's Cricket Club, which is a merger between Sydney Uni and New South Uni, I've worked a lot there to try and encourage young girls to get involved in cricket and enjoy it at whatever level, you know, whether it's social or whether they want to aspire to playing for the New South Wales Breakers or the Southern Stars. So, this is a bit different for me, going abroad and working with international teams. It's hopefully first of many trips to really get out there and help these nations improve the standard so that they can match it with the top teams. So the top 10 teams will be qualifying for the next World Cup, and Japan might be one of them.
What sort of gear have they got? I mean, you wouldn't think of Japan as having a lot of sports stores with cricket gear. I mean, are they sort of using sort of state-of-the-art stuff or, you know, hand-me-down kind of things?
They've all got very small and light bats, which suits them because they're little. And, their bats are pretty good quality, but they're well used. And I see some of their grips pretty much falling off their bats. So I wish I brought a whole stack of grips across. Because, yes, it is difficult to get equipment. I think they have an arrangement with the Greg Chappell Cricket Centre to get things sent over. So a bit limited, but they make the most of it. And, it's been really great to see them. And we've got a couple more days here with the girls, and then I'll be doing some school visits as well.
Do you think that's a uniquely women's sort of sport quality, is that women's sport and players and participants sort of reach out and help everyone? Do you think there's a more community aspect to it, or is it, you know, it happens all the time in cricket?
Look, I think with women's cricket, it is really moving forward quickly, and some of these lesser known nations are really starting to knock on the door, and I think it's exciting for us as Australians, or for the English. The Kiwis came over here and helped out the Japanese as well, so we want to help these nations get better quickly so that our competition can be really worthwhile watching in the next World Cup, which is in Bangladesh in 2014. We'll be seeing a few new faces there for sure.
Have you been able to keep tabs on the Ashes from Japan?
It's been a bit difficult. I was streaming it online through an iPad last night, so I did get to watch for the first time last night. So, yes, I was excited to see the guys out there. I hadn't seen Ash Agar. I didn't know what he looked like, but he's a little mini Mitch Stark. So, yeah, I know exactly what he looks like now.
Wouldn't say mini. He's about the same height.
Is he about the same height?
Yeah, they're pretty tall.
Yeah.
Just a bit younger.
Yeah, great to see him doing so well. So, yeah, hopefully the guys, it's going to be a big run chase, I hear, so might be a bit tough, but yeah. I'll back him in.
How are you getting on with the language barrier in terms of your coaching work there?
Learning a few phrases this morning. So things like strong top hand is suyu i topahando.
You're Got that sorted.
You sure can. Sue you eat top a hundo. Yeah. I'll use that when I'm touring.
And it's important to use sunscreen for me because I'm a bit pasty. So Hayakidume is sunscreen. So, yeah, look, it's a little bit difficult. The girls are very patient with me and we have a lot of laughs. Yeah, look, it's great fun.
All right, Alex, well, I hope you enjoy the rest of your coaching excursion in Japan. And, yeah, great to hear from you. And it's a bit of a revelation to a lot of people, I'm sure, that there's a Japanese women's cricket team. And if they make it to the World Cup in Bangladesh next year, we'll know who to credit for it or blame for it. If they go to, we'll blame you for it. Okay. They were all nodding when I said blame. Thanks, Alex.
I'm taking notes on them as well.
All right, thanks. Alex Blackwell, vice-captain of the Australian women's cricket team, currently on a coaching trip in Japan where she's working with the Japanese women's cricket team. Coming up, we'll be talking AFL.
With so much sport on offer, you almost need a personal sports calendar just to keep up. Well, we don't have a calendar, but we do have an online broadcast schedule to guide you through ABC Grandstand sports coverage. So if you're on interstate travel, hard at it at work, or just need to plan your weekend around your favourite game or show, then visit abc.net.au/grandstand and never miss another game again. ABC Grandstand. Sports coverage like no other.
ABC Grandstand.
You're listening to ABC Grandstand's Hens FC.
Hens FC.
On ABC Local Radio.
Online and on Grandstand Digital.
When the days are cold and the cards all fold and the saints we see are all made of gold. When your dreams all fail in the
AFL, and there's been a huge development in the Harry O'Brien story at Collingwood, the defender admitting he's suffering depression and has battled suicidal thoughts.
I wanna hide the truth.
It was a moment no one except Harry O'Brien saw coming. On his way into training, the Collingwood defender delivered an extraordinary 90-second statement.
I'm going through issues that I've put in the past for a long time, so including long and complicated, very complicated history of sexual abuse, suicide, depression, seeing someone get murdered, knowing who murdered that person, not being able to say anything because that person would probably murder you. You guys can just give me a bit of space because I'm going through some real stuff here. Real stuff, and it's really tough.
There's often a lot more to the story. Some red faces, perhaps, at the Herald Sun calling on him to toughen up. They've removed their call for Harry O'Brien to get over what they thought was a small spat with the coach.
I thought that was largely unfair on Harry when people are making these opinions and comments and taking these stances without all the information.
Whatever you guys have been reporting about it for, that's secondary. This is my real stuff, you know?
If he's suffering from depression, if he's suffering from stress-related issues, what he needs is the space to deal with himself, but he needs the support of friends and family and professionals.
That's the real issue here. You know, my demons that I'm starting to face.
Wayne Schwoss was the first AFL footballer to fight his battle with depression publicly. He's urged patience.
Harry's involved in an industry that has played out so publicly on a day-to-day basis at a micro level, a macro level, and I would think that that would exponentially make his challenges incredibly all that much harder at the moment. Unless you
show me how. But why? Why say it like that? In that time, at that moment.
It may also be a warning to certain people in his past to turn around and say, look, I've got a handle on things, leave me alone.
There's another text here. The man asked for privacy and you're using his situation for your radio show. I'm disgusted.
O'Brien won't play this weekend and there remains no firm date for his return.
Wow, that was one of those stories that you just sat there and thought, oh, I don't know what to make of it, Louise. It was covered quite extensively on Fox Sports News the day that it happened. What was your reaction?
Yeah, it was. I just think, in terms of what the AFL world, I think, down in Melbourne demands, they just demand the transparency. And I think there was so much criticism of Harry O'Brien beforehand that maybe he just felt he needed to come out and say all this stuff because there was, I think, you know, almost like harden up, Harry, what, you know, like what's going on? Why are you just kind of taking this, you know, disappearing from the club, having issues with the coach? And then for him to just come out and kind of just keep spilling all of this stuff. And it was just one thing after another. I think that was probably the only way he felt he could maybe handle it. Just come out and tell the truth and lay it all out there.
Yeah. Alyssa?
Yeah. It's horrible what's going on for him, and your heart kind of just sinks when you kind of hear that that's what he's dealing with, and then obviously you kind of feel for the guys in media as well, who obviously they wouldn't have known what was going on and have a right to their own opinion in saying what they did. But
would it be better, would rather than sort of fake an ankle injury or whatever it was, maybe if he'd sort of just given some hint of personal issues, it wouldn't have required such a dramatic sort of confession.
Yeah, look, even if he had have just told somebody at the club, I guess, and they'd put something out maybe on the Monday or whatever, just saying, look, this is what's going on, and give him some space, and maybe that would have happened and it wouldn't have turned out like it has. And but yeah, you got to feel for him and I guess everyone around him that's probably going through it with him.
Lindsay, what's been the reaction within the AFL world where you work to what's happened and how it's been handled?
Well, I think everyone was surprised. I mean, obviously not being close to the club situation, we were all as surprised as everyone seeing that on television and sort of play out in front of our eyes. But, I think for something like this, the club environment is probably a really good place for him to be. I mean, it's got great support networks and he's got a lot of friends around him.
And yet there's been friction there, obviously, because there are some people that are saying this is what he's thrown up as a distraction from the fact that he's, you know, having some issues with the coach. I mean, you know, that's not what I'm saying, but there is a school of thought that's what's going on. So he's kind of pulled away from the club setting and now he's back, but yeah, I just find that a little odd. If it was good for him, why didn't he just stay?
Well, I mean, that's obviously true that he did take a break, but, I mean, there are things that happen, you know, behind closed doors that we're not privy to. And I think the club will always act in the best interest of the player. I mean, when it comes to that sort of thing, and I think they're aware of what was going on, and he obviously had things that were on his mind and affecting him, that they would act in the manner, you know, most appropriate to help him.
Yes, well, I guess it's one of those topics that we're all going to be watching, and it all sort of feels awkward. It's almost like it was kind of embarrassing, awkward watching it. That awkward moment when he suddenly started telling you, you think, okay, now I feel sorry for him. Okay, now stop, don't tell us.
Yeah, you had to stop. So.
Yes,
one thing would have been enough, yeah. And you kind of like, and then it just kept going.
Yeah. So, it's obviously a lot that he's dealing with, and hopefully the club will be able to help him. But again, transparency might have been a good idea in the first place. Niamh Owens, let's get transparent about what's happening on settling the score this afternoon after the news that's coming up shortly.
We've got lots on this afternoon, Deb. We're going to talk Newcastle Rugby League, Castlereagh Rugby League. Group 7 have their centenary rugby league celebrations. We'll head to the Upper Mid-North Coast Rugby Union. We're going to talk women's football, A-League All-Stars. We'll talk wheelchair basketball. We're going to have some rugby union as well. And we've got a double pass to the State of Origin on Wednesday night to give away.
Great. And by the way, I've just noticed via Twitter that Brett Emerton's been named captain of the A-League All-Stars for that match next Saturday night against Manchester United. Now, ladies, before we close the program, tomorrow the netball grand final, the Trans-Tasman Championship, finishes up. I want to get all your tips. 2:30 tomorrow, we'll be able to hear it on Grandstand Digital Extra. Lindsay, Queensland Firebirds or Adelaide Thunderbirds?
Adelaide, I think.
Yeah.
And that's a completely unlearned, uneducated view, but, you know, they're as good as guess as any.
But I admire you for it. They're often the best tips. Alyssa?
Firebirds, got to go the underdogs, but how good is it that two Aussie teams are in the final?
Yes, that's true. So we kept the New Zealanders out. Yeah. I feel a bit sorry for the Firebirds, because with State of Origin coming up, if they win, they probably won't get a lot of attention. Louise, yeah. Who are you tipping?
I think Firebirds, they finished fourth. Adelaide finished first. Firebirds have had the momentum. They've had a couple of games, couple of wins to make it to the final. So
underdogs,
let's go Queensland.
On.
I know a Brisbane girl, so they yes. have to go that.
Louise, Alyssa and Lindsay, thank you.